Share warning, rather, continues until 12:45 for the St. Louis area, including the city of St. Louis, and Greene, Calhoun, northwestern St. Clair, western Madison, southwest Macoupin, and Jersey counties until 12:45. They say the storm is heading to the northeast at around 60 miles an hour. So look for that possibly to create some problems in central Illinois later this afternoon. There is a risk of a severe storm or two in the area as an unsettled weather pattern sets up across the Midwest for much of this week. A frontal boundary is going to waver across the area with warm and humid air flowing to the north toward the front. A series of low-pressure systems will track east along the front, bringing periods of showers and thunderstorms to the region off and on through the week. Severe thunderstorms, locally heavy rain will be possible from time to time throughout the middle of the week, and we'll see a gradual cool down conjunction with this weather pattern. For the rest of today in Champaign-Urbana, skies will be partly sunny, and we do have a risk of showers and thunderstorms. A humid high temperature of 84 degrees. Our winds this afternoon out of the southwest at 15 to 20 miles an hour. Forecast for tonight, mostly cloudy, a chance for showers and thunderstorms, a low of 58. Winds will be west at 5 to 10, becoming north after midnight. Tomorrow's forecast cooling off a little bit with a high of 73 degrees, mostly cloudy, and a chance of showers and thunderstorms again. Tomorrow night, a chance of thunderstorms in the evening, then showers and thunderstorms are likely after midnight Tuesday into Wednesday, the low of around 55. Wednesday, showers and thunderstorms likely, the high 72. They're likely to continue through Wednesday night, a lingering chance on Thursday. Before we dry out a little bit, it'll be mostly cloudy Thursday night, sunny on Friday, and another chance of rain returning Friday night and into Saturday, partly cloudy skies Saturday night and Sunday. Thursday's high is only in the mid-60s, with upper 60s for Friday and Saturday, low 70s for Sunday. Low temperatures Wednesday in the lower 50s, Thursday night in the mid-40s, and then lower 50s Friday night around 50 Saturday night. Right now, the weather conditions are mainly sunny across east central Illinois. Temperatures approaching or exceeding 80 degrees, already at 82 in Danville with sunshine. Decatur, mostly sunny and 81. It's 80 in Springfield, 82 in Taylorville, 81 in Paris, 79 in Mattoon, and 82 in Rantoul. At Willard Airport at the moment, the skies are mostly sunny and it's 83 degrees. With a relative humidity at 64, or rather 52%, the dew point is at 64, the heat index at 84 degrees. Winds are rather gusty out of the southwest, 26 to at times 33 miles an hour, and the barometric pressure is rising at 29.73. On Friends Plaza right now, 82 degrees, with a high expected to be a couple of degrees above that, 84, maybe 85 by the time the afternoon is over. It's 20 minutes before 1 o'clock. It's the Afternoon Magazine on WILL. I'm Tom Rogers. Attorneys for former Illinois Governor Rob Blagojevich were expected to start putting on their defense today, but it's been moved back to Wednesday. Defense attorneys had told Judge James Zagel that they were having difficulty scheduling some high-profile witnesses. Jeffrey Kramer is a former federal prosecutor. He's been following the trial, and he says Blagojevich's attorneys did a poor job cross-examining witnesses, so now they're almost forced to put on a defense. But Kramer tells Illinois Public Radio's Robert Wildebohr that's risky.
There's absolutely a risk putting on a defense. Once the defense puts on any case, puts in any document whatsoever, the government can then comment on that case in closing arguments, and that's usually a very effective tactic.
I'm wondering what you would do if you were in their position.
I would have asked better questions. Just to step back for a second, a lot of the objections were based upon the form of the questions. Obviously, it's hard to put on this defense. It's hard to cross-examine this many witnesses. But it does seem like when they laid out their questions, they were laid out in such a way, and one could say haphazard way, they weren't tight. They weren't surgical. And it allowed, objections to the form, which is basically how you ask the questions. Something as rudimentary as that. Well, that can be fixed if you just sit down and lay it out precisely. They didn't do that. So the question was asked improperly. The objection was sustained. And you saw the defense lawyers repeatedly try to get in the same thing. There were repeated objections, right? Hundreds of objections. Most of them sustained. Sometimes they gave up. Sometimes they were getting a little bit. If I was where they are now, I don't think I'd put on anybody. I think I'd argue it.
Really? You wouldn't try to put on a defense?
I think it's
because I thought it looks like they've gotten hammered. But you would not put on a defense?
I'll tell you, Rob, it's a close call. And why I would not put on a defense, I think there's enough that they can argue with. The difference is, can these lawyers, and that's what it comes down to. It comes down to Shelly Sharosky on closing, presumably. Is there enough for him to argue? And that's my distinguishing. I think no. I think he needs a little more. What would I do? I would close right now. You know, I'd go forward. I would not put on the case. My fear would be putting on witnesses that I probably am not going to elicit too much from, opening them up to a government's cross where the government can then clean up other things they want or bring in other items and then allow the government to comment on my case. In my balancing, I think that's where I would come down. I think this set of lawyers, though, with all due respect, I think they need some more ammunition to close.
Okay, currently he was convicted of lying to FBI agents. That carries a sentence of up to 5 years. What does that actually look like in reality?
Judges have tremendous latitude now for sentencing.
Which, given that Zagel is the judge in this case, is not really good news for Blagojevich from what we've seen.
This is a very good judge, and he's a very fair judge. But I think it's safe to say that this defendant is not his favorite defendant of all time. I think it's a safe statement. But that doesn't mean he's going to hit him with the 5 years. A defendant facing only one count of lying to an FBI agent will be looking maybe a couple years, something like that.
So if he's facing a couple years now, there's this second trial with many counts. If he gets convicted on another 8 counts, is he then looking at 40 years or how much does the sentence go up? How does this usually play out?
On paper, you know, if you took the maximum, yeah, 30, 40, 50 years, whatever, how many counts there were. In reality, I think if he gets convicted of half a dozen counts, he's probably looking at somewhere between 7 to 10 years. That's what I would think. The judge is not going to max him out, as they say. He's going to give something less. It would shock me if he got convicted of even all counts of the indictment. Then he got 15 years. That would surprise me. That's a long time. Likewise, he wouldn't get 3 years. So somewhere in the middle is where Judge Zagel would come down. And keep in mind, this has to be, you know, appellate proof, if you will. So the judge wants to be reasonable. You always want to go in the middle. That helps you for appeal. And this judge has been around for a while, so he's no fool. It is substantial. 2 to 7 years, a difference of 5 years. Keep in mind, you're doing 85% of it in federal time. That's substantial time. You're away from your children. You're away from your family. It's hard-pressed to think of many things that are worse.
Jeffrey Kramer spoke with Illinois Public Radio's Robert Wildebohr. Kramer is a former federal prosecutor. He's now the managing director of the Chicago office of Kroll, an investigative and risk consulting company. It's 12:45. Some Christians believe that Judgment Day would arrive on May 21st, this past Saturday, but the day came and went without event. NPR's Barbara Bradley Haggerty reports on how true believers are coping with the disappointment.
As recently as 2 weeks ago, Gary Vollmer was absolutely certain that on May 21st, God would send devastating earthquakes, raise believers to heaven, and then destroy the world 5 months later. Now that it hasn't happened, he's unfazed.
God is God. God's going to do what he has to do.
True, Vollmer says. Believers got some of the details wrong, but the thrust of the message is right.
Judgment Day has come and passed, but it was a spiritual judgment on the world. There is no more salvation. Salvation is over with. The fact is, we have 153 days, and the 21st of October, the world will end.
I profiled several believers before May 21st. Yesterday, most did not answer the phone, and those who did wouldn't talk on tape. But one man, his voice quavering, said he was still holding out hope that they were one day off. Another believer asserted that their prayers worked, and God delayed judgment so that more people could be saved. Tom Evans was contrite. Evans is on the board of Family Radio, the organization led by Harold Camping, who calculated and promoted the May 21st date.
I don't know where we went wrong, other than we obviously didn't understand the scriptures in the way that we should.
Camping has yet to make a statement, but Evans believes they will not recalculate and announce a new date for Judgment Day. After all, they've done that at least once before, in 1994, and he hopes they've learned a lesson.
This
kind of thing has a long history.
Jerry Walls is an expert on eschatology, or the study of the end times, at the University of Notre Dame. He says there have been dozens of doomsday prophets, though most don't pinpoint a date. One of the most famous was William Miller, a farmer and amateur Bible scholar. Miller persuaded many people that Jesus would return in 1844, and when he didn't...
One of their followers said, "We wept and wept all night till we could weep no more," and just this sense of utter devastation because these people had completely sold out. And when it did not materialize, their lives were really shattered in many ways.
They eventually decided that judgment had occurred, but it happened in heaven. From that was born a new denomination, the Seventh-day Adventists. It's too early to know how believers will cope with Saturday's failed prophecy in the long run. Some will admit they were wrong, but experts say most will find a way to rationalize their beliefs.
It's very hard for us to say, boy, was I stupid.
Elliot Aronson is a prominent psychologist and co-author of the book Mistakes Were Made, But Not By Me.
And the more committed a person is to their prophecy, the more likely they are to justify that action and to try to convince people that their belief was in some way right or good.
Before May 21st, many believers quit their jobs, left their families, and gave their savings to Family Radio, which then sent out caravans and put up billboards announcing the end. Tom Evans says now that the date has passed, all they can do is pick up and move on.
I don't know what the future holds for Family Radio or for any of us. We just have to pray that God will be merciful.
Evans says he hopes the organization will repay people who gave their money to the cause, but at this point, he can't guarantee it. Barbara Bradley Haggerty, NPR News.
I've been a part of WILL Book Mentor Project for the last 2 years and read to my son's classroom for the last 2 years. Normally when I walk in, they all run to me and hug me. It's a feeling that I never had in my life. And the reason I'm doing this is because I want him to grow up and do the same thing when he has his own kids. My name is Shoni Coleman. WILL is my source for opportunities to interact with my son and other children.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 23rd of May, 2011. It's the birthday of the poet Jane Kenyon, born Ann Arbor, Michigan, 1947. Lived with the poet Donald Hall, her husband, in New Hampshire. Lived there until her untimely death of leukemia at the age of 47. It's the birthday of the woman who wrote Goodnight Moon, Margaret Wise Brown,